Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
It is Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN. It is Holy Week, and we're going to get into godly things in just a few moments. But, David, we were talking off the air before the program today about something that I did not know, and I still cannot get this image out of my mind. It is being reported everywhere, but apparently this has been well known to some people in the medical community for quite some time, that at the moment of death, and this is just so freaky to me, at the moment of death, even though your heart stops beating, science is now saying that, I'm going to get the heebie-jeebies just thinking about this, science is now saying that the brain continues functioning to the point where you actually have consciousness for like 3 minutes after your body dies. To me, that is absolutely bizarre.
Well, it's, many top scientists have argued this for years and years and years. But there is a new study that's out, and it's the Bioethics Research Library. Southampton University in the UK is who authored the study. But it's everywhere. It's on the wire today. And it basically says that what happens after your brain your brain is still functioning after you go into cardiac arrest. And there appears to be between 2 to 3 minutes where your brain is thinking, something's wrong here, I'm dead. And there's a feeling, they believe, that because they understand the brain and they understand what the brain does when it goes into shock, that there would be a feeling that you're trapped inside your dead body with a brain stem and a frontal lobe that's still functioning.
Oh, that does not sound fun at all.
Well, it's death. I mean, I'm sure, you know, your birth was traumatic as well. What we don't know is if that matters, if there's no memory, right? If it's not something you can be traumatized by because it's happening for 2 minutes. How many times have you thought you lost something that was crucial to you? Maybe you missed
cell phones.
Cell phones, or your child, you're at the mall, you're like, oh my God, my kid is gone. Something happened, and then you find your kid. You're not traumatized by that loss because it's not a real loss. Your brain is able to tell you, well, you were just freaked out momentarily. Maybe that's what's happening here. It doesn't mean that it's something that you're going to, it's not like for eternity you're living in that.
No, but think about this for just a moment. I mean, we all know that we have to leave this world at some point, and the idea that you actually have this 3 minute window where you are conscious of the fact that you are dead has got to be, for everybody who goes through it, just the worst feeling in the world, knowing that you are temporarily trapped in what is now your dead body.
Well, 40% of those who went through full cardiac arrest, and these were not patients that were in a position where the cardiac arrest was planned. It's not like, you know, they were having heart surgery, stop the heart. But 40% of people who had an organic cardiac arrest were aware of the time that they were clinically dead before their hearts were restarted. And so that's where a majority of the facts come here from. And his name is Dr. Sam Parnia, who led the Consciousness May Continue After Death survey. And he is a part of a multidisciplinary team at Southampton University in the United Kingdom. And they just published at the Office Official Journal of European Resuscitation Council. And the title is Awareness During Resuscitation.
Wow. And they've actually got personal stories from people. And what, David, what do they describe? Do they describe a feeling of panic? Do they describe a feeling of serenity? Do they see Jesus? Do they see a flash of light? What do they say?
Well, they went through 2,000 people who suffered cardiac arrest and were successfully, obviously, they were successfully resuscitated, or we would not have this study. You know, the people who died didn't respond. But 2,000 people.
Well, they were asked, but they stiffed.
They were cardiac arrest and they were resuscitated. And they went through 15 hospitals in the United Kingdom, in the United States, and in Austria. Mm. And the largest study of its kind is to date. This has been with, you know, scientific methodology and peer reviewed, all that good stuff. And what they found was the majority of people, 40%, were aware during the time that they were clinically dead that something was going on. And of those 40%, the majority of those people felt trapped. They felt they were confused, they were scared, and they didn't know what was going on.
What I call Friday night.
Or, yeah. But, I mean, that could also deal with the fact that they just had a heart attack. You know, I mean, I'm sure the body is going through a different. But I don't know. I just found that whole thing to be.
I think this is fascinating, and it just brings out so many questions. Like, does it matter how you died? For example, let's just say you're at hospice. Let's just say you've got a lot of morphine in you, and you're sleeping anyway.
Right.
I wonder if you have some kind of a moment of clarity for 3 minutes before you actually do totally die.
You know, what I always think about is when someone is. You know, hooked up to machines. A lot of times they'll bring the family in to say goodbye, but they're clinically brain dead. The machines are keeping them alive. I always thought, is that soul gone? Is that consciousness gone? And then once the machines are off, it's just science at that point. Metabolic function stops. Because if we really believed that people were experiencing life in their brain and the machines were keeping them alive, I don't think we'd ever unplug anyone.
Yeah.
Brain activity is crucial in that decision. Doctors make that decision based on brain activity. So if you're brain dead, I would, you know, who am I? I always think that if you're brain dead, everything's gone at that point. There's no soul. There's no anything there. Whatever you believe at that point, they've, you know, left this mortal coil.
Oh, I just have so many questions about this, David. Like, how about somebody who dies a death where, you know, the body is almost instantly obliterated? We could be talking about a combat situation. Mm. We could be talking about an accidental situation with an explosion or something like that. I mean, there's no way anybody's going to survive that to come back and talk to doctors. But I wonder if those people also experience 3 minutes of feeling like they're trapped in their own body.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
it's
we'll never know.
I don't know how you could do this study though and expect it to be. It's not a good study. You know what I mean? No one's gonna like see these results and be like, "Wow, I'm happy for that next phase, that transition out of this planet." I mean, you know, you find that there are these doctors that study death and do all this research. You either find that they're super religious. Or they just turn completely against God and are, you know, atheist because they just are like, you know, this is so dark and twisted. A lot of people tend to look at people that work at funeral homes that way, too, where they're just like, you know, what line of how could you find this line of work? And in all reality, the truth is that people that find themselves in that line of work are some of the most empathetic people in the universe. They have so much love that they want to comfort people at times that they're, you know, going through horrible pain and loss. But again, we civilians look at that industry and think, who would ever want that? And the people in that industry are like, I want to comfort people. That's why I'm in this field. These doctors, though, they go one of two ways. They either become uber religious or completely against religion because the science just hardens their heart.
Well, again, an absolutely fascinating study. I would not exactly call it comforting, but we put the story, one of the many stories about this situation, up on the Bowerly and Bellavia Facebook page if you want to get more details. And, you know, I always wonder, and we've actually done shows on this way back when, you know, how many people in our audience have had near-death experiences where they have actually been clinically dead and then somehow they were resuscitated and revived and lived to tell the tale. I always wonder about the people who've had these near-death experiences and what it did to their sense of faith. Did it strengthen their sense of faith? Did it tear it apart. I mean, how many books have been written by people who say, and who can prove actually, that they were clinically dead, but they had some religious experience during it? They might have gone into it being skeptical or possibly atheist, but then they come out of it because they had some kind of a vision in that period where they were actually dead.
You know, I'm at Resuscitation Journal, which is actually a medical journal that does nothing but study this. And they found that they've broken this down into out-of-hospital cardiac arrest and in-hospital cardiac arrest. And there's two obviously different groups because it really depends on the ability to, the having scientific medical professionals there to bring you back as opposed to someone who goes through cardiac arrest and is brought back by CPR or another reason. But of the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, and again, these are European doctors. So in Europe, it turns out that 350,000 Europeans are affected with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. And they are going through the same thing of what does, can you realize the potential of uncontrolled, what does your body do after circulatory death? Is there a difference between circulatory death and brain death? And what does the brain do after circulatory death? And that's where this study came from.
And David, there were actually cases, not to be morbid, there were actually cases during the French Revolution where they were guillotining, dozens and hundreds of people each and every day, where the executioner, as a scientific experiment, would hold up the recently severed head and would say something to the effect of, if you can hear me and understand me, blink your eyes twice. And many occasions, the person's head, not attached to the body, actually followed the commands and instruction of the executioner for, I think they said, 3 to 5 minutes.
Well, I mean, think about it. The brain is the main processing unit of that entire body. And if there's blood still in the brain, it doesn't matter if you're losing blood. Eventually, that brain needs that blood. And, you're not going to be able to move your arm. Now, it would be crazy if they could move their arms and legs, through control after the head is gone.
That would be weird.
It would be impossible. But see, the other thing, I mean, nerves are going to do what nerves do. But, this also, one of the reasons why this journal and this paper are so important is that there's a doctor in China that is trying to do a head transplant. And it turns out that everyone that's up for the head transplant always ends up backing out at the last second. And the reason for that is because the chances of survivability are zero. But this guy's done a TED talk and he's 100%. And he, of course, can't get any traction in European countries or in America. So he's gone to China to get the funding, to get the research done. But he claims that not only can he take a quadriplegic or someone with a horrible condition and take their head and put it on a sound body and allow that person to have a quality of life afterwards. Almost 99% of medical experts are saying this guy's insane. We don't want him associated with us.
Be my first thought.
But China has agreed to give him the go-ahead. And they've got plenty of people in political prison that they could experiment on. But the thing here is that this paper was really done as a way to counteract this guy's head transplant talk.
Wow. All right. Obviously, it is Holy Week, and we're going to be holy coming up on News Radio 930 WBEN. We have a question I think that everybody is going to have an opinion in terms of answering, so don't go anywhere. Before we get to our next topic, let's bring Emmy on board on News Radio 930 WBEN, who apparently has been a medical professional. Emmy, is that correct?
Yes, I'm a nurse practitioner, and I had worked in organ donation for a number of years. I used to have to explain to families all the time why their loved one whose heart was beating and whom they could see the ventilator, giving them respirations was in fact dead. The only real death is brain death. It's not cardiac death. That's why we can bring people back from cardiac arrest with CPR and all.
Did you ever have a situation where somebody was technically dead, then resuscitated, and said, you're never going to believe the feeling I just had of being trapped in my body?
Not so much trapped in my body as stories of the journey that they had, the experience that they had.
Was there one story that was a consistent theme?
Yeah, it's what everybody knows. It's seeing a light or seeing a loved one or even seeing what their particular religious belief is. If you're Christian, you saw, were apt to see Jesus or Mary. If you were some other religion, you were apt to see the symbols of that religion. And one of the ways I used to explain to people, and it's graphic and it's difficult, and you have to know the family well enough to do this, but being brain dead is the same as being decapitated. We know that they're brain dead because the pressures in their brain, and it's usually from trauma, but it can be from stroke, the pressures from the swelling of the brain become so high that they exceed the blood pressure that the heart can put out. So it's just simple math to know that there's no blood flowing to that brain. There are obviously more scientific ways to prove that as well.
But nobody in your career, nobody came back from a near-death experience and said, I felt trapped in my body and I was totally conscious of everything happening.
Not the trapped. I was totally conscious of everything happening. Most of the time, people said they were floating above their body and watching.
I've talked to people who've been through that. It's fascinating to me. Stay with us if you've got more to say. We're going to be venturing into a phenomenal topic that is, well, it's we just know you're going to love it because everybody's got an opinion on it. Some people stronger than others, of course, but don't go anywhere. You're not going to want to miss it on News Radio 930 WBEN. You're listening to Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. Bowerly and Bellavia, happy to be your afternoon pals for the drive home after work and hope you look forward to it starting about noontime. Oh my, music these kids are making these days, I'll tell you. It is Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN. Welcome to the show. And obviously this is a very important week for Christians, it being Holy Week and obviously other ceremonies coming up of various and sundry religions. But David, this all leads us to a question, which I might add is made a little bit more complicated by what our last caller said, talking about people who are in the process of transitioning from being dead or alive. And when she said that, you know, basically, if somebody is Christian, they're going to see Christian religious symbols. If somebody is Jewish, they'll see Jewish religious symbols. If somebody is Muslim, they'll see Muslim religious symbols. I mean, and I find that absolutely, I find that weird, and I don't know why in those conscious moments that you are supposed to have between the time you are dead and the time you are really dead. But it begs the question, David, in 2019, is God dead? Is there really a God? Does God really exist, or is God simply a fable made up by a bunch of people a long time ago so we wouldn't be so scared of crossing over and we wouldn't be so bummed out when other people that we love do cross over because we think they've entered the land of paradise, milk, honey, and mansions, otherwise known as heaven? And do you believe in God? And we'd like to know why you believe in God. Or why you don't believe in God. I mean, we have atheists who listen to the show. They might be every bit as conservative as you are, but they just don't happen to believe in a supreme being. You know, that's fine. It's your life, and you are certainly entitled to your belief. But 803-0930 is the phone number, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. David, let's give our thoughts first of all, and that will probably spur some people to call in and be all angry with us or support us greatly. David, you are very much a believer in God and a believer in a specific faith.
I am.
Would you like to expand upon that answer?
Well, look at I believe in optimism and I believe in just hope. And I think those are very powerful things. And I think that when you you look at where there's the absence of hope and the absence of optimism, you find people live lives that are absolutely miserable.
Okay. Well,
and so I think that just from a practical standpoint of control of mankind, if there's not rules, if there's not accountability, if there's not consequence, you have people that will act like base animals. They will run around and kill and take and be narcissistic and not think about others. So, you know,
from let's leave me out of this.
But from a social control standpoint, there's an important part of government and structure and law that's based on theology. From a spiritual standpoint, that's where, you know, you roll the dice because everyone has a different outlook on that. I can tell you that I've seen enough of just cruelty and, you know, just ghastly conditions to know that you do find grace in the worst situations on earth. And when you find, when you're in the midst of death, you see people that transition, that find something on the other side that gives them the ability to either fight harder, whether it's cancer or it's combat. That to me has really solidified my faith. Some people lose their faith when they're around death all the time, and some people, you know, become more grounded and stronger in it.
See, I'm one of those people that people don't like because it sounds like I'm equivocating, but I absolutely 100%, David, believe in God. I do not believe that this universe was some random explosion of various elements. I don't believe in a non-godly Big Bang theory. I think there has to be some divine intelligence that is controlling everything. For example, you know, when you look at this planet and the life and the diversity of life that exists on this planet, when you look at the complexity of the human body and the fact that somebody actually had to design that, I do not believe that it was some accident. I do not believe it's just some random accumulation of carbon matter. I absolutely 100% believe in God. Call it God, call it a divine spirit, call it the creator, call it what you will. But I really don't see, David, how people cannot believe in a God. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Science can't explain everything. And do you think that scientists, even in 2019, using the very latest computers and AI and everything else, do you think that science could actually create the universe? Or let's just keep it simple. Do you think science could actually create a fish or a clam, much less a human being?
Well, I mean, they've tried for years. You know, it doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means that they haven't been able to do it. But, you know, there's a great study that shows, you know, brain activity in pigs. And the scientists have been able to take brain-dead pigs and bring, you know, activity back to a brain-dead pig. But what's funny is that it doesn't show you whether they function afterwards. I mean, there were things in 1850 that science and medicine is doing right now that they thought was impossible. So to me, as man evolves or artificial intelligence grows and we're able to do calculations and all this other stuff, that doesn't equivocate. To me, that's not the reason why God exists or God does not exist. I think that if you're going to ask the existential question, does God exist? I think you have to look at just how absolutely improbable it is that we're still finding different species underwater. I mean, there's elements of the planet we haven't even explored. I mean, I love people and the ambition for mankind to go to Mars and to leave the galaxy, but you know, just maybe a couple 100,000 feet below, you'll see that there's a whole new, you know, planet underneath our oceans that we've never even looked at.
Absolutely. I mean, they found found a living example of a fish from the dinosaur era, the coelacanth, way back when. They thought it was a totally gone fish, an extinct species. And sure enough, I think it was off the coast of Madagascar or something. They found one way back when, 50, 60 years ago. And, you know, they still will haul them up from time to time, as the coelacanth is actually not extinct, but is a species which is still on this planet. But here's where I'm going to lose some people, David. I almost hesitate to say it, but for as strong as my belief, my firm belief, and it, you know what? And it actually is based on probability and statistics, my firm belief in God, I haven't quite figured out this Jesus fellow yet. I haven't quite figured him out because I don't have any doubt that Jesus lived. I do believe absolutely, and I think there's plenty of corroboration on this, in a historical Jesus. Now, the question becomes, and I think there is sufficient evidence to back up, and not in the Bible, by the way, because I don't like it when people use the Bible to prove something. You know, using an example from the Bible to prove the Bible is real always seemed to me like to not make a lot of sense. But as far as Jesus's divinity, David, I don't know. I really wish I did, but I don't know. My name in Greek is Didymus, otherwise known as Doubting Thomas, and I really don't know if he was resurrected. And it is upon the resurrection, of course, that all of the Christian faith is based. Because if you don't believe that Jesus was resurrected and died for your sins, you can't really legitimately call yourself a Christian, even if you know that a historical Jesus lived, and even if you believe all of the things that he said, but you don't believe in the resurrection, you know, you're not really a Christian.
You know, the biggest issue I think that we all deal with on a daily basis is pride, right? Vanity and pride are the most the biggest problems that mankind is constantly dealing with on a daily basis. Children have it, adults have it, and to humble yourself to say, I don't know. And you see this in whenever you see an anti-God, an atheist that wants to talk about science is always someone, there's a deep insecurity about not knowing something. And so if you don't know something, faith is for, academics will tell you that faith is for ignorant people, that you can't just have faith that something's going to happen. So you have to have proof and evidence and facts. And the reality is that the absence of God in your life, you then have to believe that mankind has all the answers. And when mankind has all the answers, that's when we start dropping bombs in people's heads. And that's when we start to control things that we really have no business controlling. And moreover, we invent things. We take the calendar and say, well, in order for this to have happened, we have to add 7 million years to the age of the earth. And in order for this to have happened, we have to prove that man is responsible. It's this narcissism that we have in our own life every single day that we have to know the answers. And I have to be proved, like, you have to prove it to me. Well, who the hell are you? It happens all the time. Like, I have to know when this answer is going to go down. I need the Mueller report 3 weeks ago because I need to know. And when you truly live outside of that and you humble yourself, which I think is a huge part of faith, is that you realize you don't have the answers. And why do you worship? Do you worship because you want to go to a better place? Or do you worship because you believe there's a deity that's so powerful that you're disrespecting that deity by not worshiping it? That's really two different, walks.
Yeah, my version of worship, as I've said many times, is, again, the premise is I strongly believe in God, a creator. And my only prayer that I will ever utter, I don't ask for a Ferrari. I don't ask for a cure for spine issues. What I do ask for is your will be done. Thy will be done. Because to me, that my faith in God is so strong that is all I believe I need to say, is just acquiesce to God's wishes and accept God's wishes, whatever they might be, and say, thy will be done. You know, you've got this. I don't have this. I don't know the answer about Jesus. I have no clue. But whatever the Creator's role is, that's the only prayer that I will that I'll give out.
When you start to look at faith and you start to look at religion and look at God, a lot of things become uncomfortable. And there are things that we do in our daily life that when you find out, well, this isn't exactly what, the Quran says. This isn't exactly what the New Testament prescribes. This isn't what the Old Testament say. Now there's a tremendous amount of insecurity because you feel that somehow your lifestyle or the things that you do or the things that you say aren't in, concert with the religion that you want to believe in. And again, it always comes back to pride. It comes back to what is our importance in this world. And when you think about it, you want to really humble yourself. What is the world going to say about you in 100 years? And the answer is not a damn thing.
Exactly.
And you know what people are going to, you're on the radio, I'm on the radio. There was a time that I had my own program here and I wasn't on the radio, and I got email after email of, oh my gosh, we need you, we miss you, this outrage must be corrected. And you know what? A week later, nobody cared. And the next guy comes on the radio and they're the biggest thing in the world. And again, it's all about perspective. It's all about humility and realizing you play a role for a very small amount of time when you look at the history of the planet. And none of us We have our love, we have our family, we have our moments, but those moments dry up and they go away. And if you focus on this life and you focus on, you know, what you can do for you, you're going to end up penniless, sad, angry, and bitter. And I think God gives you an avenue to think about something bigger than yourself and a world beyond this one.
Well, the paradox is, even though I don't know if Jesus was the Son of God, I find his teachings so helpful that in many ways, and this is going to sound cocky, but in many ways, I believe that I lead more of a Christian life than some of the people who wave the banner of Christianity around and you know, want everybody to know what they are, because I think his teachings are very, very sound, and obviously a brilliant man and the ultimate rebel, which you got to respect. Do you believe in God, and why? So, yeah, I mean, David, I mean, you are a Christian.
I am unapologetically, I'm a Christian. I just feel that when you're talking about religion in the sense that, you know, this is the way I see the world, this is the way I was raised to see the world, and then this is the experience I've had as a man, as an adult, every one of them have coincided for me. The way I was raised and what I believe, and as I grow older, I see more evidence of that faith every single day. And again, it's not about the fact that, well, Jesus is a great story, or the teachings are cool, or you believe in the fact that the Bible is a historical document, or it's a book of fairy tales. To me, it's about that the story of holiness, and the fact that it's, if you believe in God and you believe this is the most powerful being in the universe that created us, what role do you have as a man on earth not to just reflexively worship the most powerful thing in the world? It's our duty unto man to basically humble ourselves in the presence of God.
But see, I wrestle with the divinity of Christ, I would say, every single day. And because please do not use Bible verses to try to prove that he was the Son of God, because to me, this just, it's absolutely invalid. What I need, David, I need absolute positive proof that this guy that everybody thought was dead actually resurrected and was seen by his followers following his resurrection. And one of the things that kind of bothers me is in the New Testament, there's a part where Jesus was supposedly seen by 500 people after his death. And I think we've talked about this before, but to me, that is epic. And I would expect that to get more coverage, if you will, in the New Testament than it did.
It certainly does when it comes to the Roman history, because those 500 people all met very untimely and painful deaths. And, you know, one of the things you have to understand, before the Romans became Roman Catholics, the Romans were in the business of slaughtering Christians. And they wanted that. The catacombs, the early story of the church of the Christians in the catacombs is I think, one of the most powerful stories of early, and to me proves a whole lot of, look, you want to talk about Gitmo and torture? Boil me in oil and ask me what I saw yesterday. I'm going to tell you a whole lot of stories to get me out of that oil. And there was a lot of people that were tortured to death, and all they had to do was recant what they saw on the hill that day. And they didn't.
Or what they said they saw on the hill that day. I mean,
well, but my point is that, you know, there were two guys next to Christ on the cross, and one of them had, you know, an epiphany, and one of them decided to trust the guy next to him.
Right.
But they don't talk about that other guy on the cross. He heard that conversation too, and he decided, nah, I'm good where I'm at. There are people that believe that this is what they saw, this is what they believed in, and they paid a horrible price for that. As, by the way, Christians are today, and other folks of other religions that are tortured for their beliefs.
Oh,
too.
Absolutely. I look forward to hearing what our audience has to say.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.